tuning into the Sure Thing today. Warren and Ryan here with you. It is November 29th after the holiday weekend. We got lots to cover. College football, lots happened. The coaching carousel is in full swing, so we'll get into that as well as the games from the weekend. We'll also get to the NFL, maybe a little MLB free agency as that seems to be heading. It's a lot of action on the hot stove before the lockout deadline looming in a couple of days as well. So lots of stuff going on. You can check us out, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and the Apple and the iHeartRadio app under the podcast section. We'll be back on Thursday, as always, with picks for the championship weekend in college football. Ryan, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was great. It was good. Went over to the in-laws' house, got to hang out there. Had to work a little bit, so that, you know, kind of stunk. But as soon as we got over there, good family time, you know, obviously the food, nice little nap. Then we're back at it for round two. But yeah, you know, your typical Thanksgiving, nothing too wild.
Yeah, same thing over here. Still in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Come back tomorrow. Let me tell you, there's about 3 inches of snow on the ground.
That game yesterday, I was like, oof, that doesn't look like that was in Baltimore. What game was I watching that at?
Michigan?
Maybe it was Michigan, yeah.
But yeah, yesterday, late afternoon, there was a little dusting Friday or Saturday night. But then yesterday, got the little lake effect where my aunt and uncle live, where I'm staying. They are, about 2 to 3 inches out there. Heard the snow plows going this morning, which is always, I was like, what is that rumbling? I was like, ah, the snow plows. We had a good Thanksgiving over here. Got to go to both places. My dad's side of the family too. We did our, always love a good, we go bowling on Friday, Black Friday morning. Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing. I was telling my dad about this. I was like, so, you know, maybe I've mentioned this the last time I was here a couple of years ago, but I don't know. Dallas, the bowling in Dallas is too fancy for me. Like the main event, the strikes, like, you know, that type of lanes. I don't know where else you would go. Mm-hmm. Too fancy for me.
Yeah.
I need the just give me the your grimy. Bowling. You're grimy. Give me your lanes. It's bowling. There's a little bar there. But just I need the old school. Just your bowling alley lanes. I guess there are places like that in Dallas that I probably need to check out, but the old school lane is where it's at. There's no ropes course in there. They might have a little small arcade room where you got the claw that you got to do it, and maybe a couple, maybe like NBA Jam in there or something, but they don't have the big time fancy machines. It's just, you're there to bowl and that's it. Like I need to go check one of those places out in Dallas.
I got a couple for you. They're a little far from you. There's one in Plano. It's called Plano Super Bowl. It's right off 75 in like Parker. That is your typical bowling alley. No fancy food or anything. It's just anything deep fried or that can be made on a flat top grill. So like your quesadillas, you know, maybe some French fries, something like that. And then there's one in Allen. I guess it's off like 75 and maybe Bethany. It's right between Bethany and maybe McDermott. And I think that's called like Allen's Super Bowl or something like that. And that is your, it's, I mean, it, I don't think it's any bigger than maybe like our, it's probably half the size of our second floor or excuse me, third floor's office that we were in at work. Like it is small. There's like maybe 30 lanes and that is it. So if you need a couple grimy spots for some bowling, I got you there.
There's also one too. I've heard USA Bowl that is in, that's around 35 in Corporate, it looks like, Walnut Hill. Ooh,
yeah, that sounds like that could be.
Seeing the picture, that looks like a nice bowling spot. And again, I'm not saying that those other spots are bad. Like if you want to go there or whatever, it's fine. But sometimes you just need a little grime in the bowling.
Well, whatever. Especially if some of those prices get a little crazy for bowling.
Yes. 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 Especially there's this place. Bowl and Barrel, have you heard of that place?
Yep. Oh yeah.
I went there. First of all, that's like fake bowling anyways.
Yeah. Because
it's I'm pretty sure the pins are attached to strings.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
So that's like fake bowling, and that price is ridiculous. I was like, I'm not coming. I was like, sure, I'll go there. Then I was like, oh. I I would have rather not.
Yeah.
I would have rather not gone to that. But no, it was a good good time bowling and just hung out over here. But it was a good Thanksgiving so far. And then we come back tomorrow. So to what I see is some very nice weather. So that's very exciting. But all right, let's get into it. Let's start with college football because that's where I think a lot of the news is going on right now. And we'll start with the games on the field. Michigan beats Ohio State. So Ohio State is done. Michigan moves on in a game that we could get into was Michigan pretty much dominated the whole game. Ohio State was up 10-7. But after that, they decided to, hey, we're just going to continue to run the ball for some reason when it wasn't working instead of using their great receivers. But whatever, they got beat. It was probably a matter of time for Ohio State to get beat. The defense got shredded on the ground, went back to the defense like it was against Minnesota the first game, Oregon the second game of the season when they just got shredded on the ground, as I said. So they're out. Michigan wins. And then you got Alabama. Look, Alabama stinks. Alabama sucks. They are such an average. Like, they are so average. It's for the normal Alabama. They're bad. They're a bad football team. They hold on, and then Oklahoma State holds on, and they got it. Oklahoma State, they win. I think they're in the playoff. But, man, it was a great Saturday of college football.
Yeah, really, really good. I'll push back a little bit on the Alabama stinks. If you're comparing them to Alabama teams of the past, yeah, this doesn't live up to the hype of a lot of those. Their blocking, their offensive line is a little suspect, to say the least. That's, you know, usually one of their strong suits where they can just kind of win the line of scrimmage and pound teams into the ground. They weren't able to do that as much as they would want to against Auburn. So I think that's going to be their biggest issue when they face Georgia is being able to block and you know, give Bryce Young plenty of time to make some passes. They ended up closing out, winning in crunch time. Big play on third down to score a touchdown with like, what was it, like 30 seconds left, something like that, which is a great throw, great catch. And then they do it. They take care of it in overtime. I didn't watch. I only got to see the last 5 minutes of Michigan, Ohio State. I have an annual kind of flag football game that we play with a bunch of buddies on the Saturday after Thanksgiving. So I was out doing that. So when I got home, I saw the score and I was kind of shocked. It was just when Michigan had gone up 2 scores. But from everything I saw, it's kind of like what you said there. I mean, the Michigan just kind of pounded the rock on the ground over and over and over again. Ohio State really didn't have an answer. And even though their defense had been looking better, or definitely, you know, better from where they started at the beginning of the season, kind of looked like they regressed back to that just a little bit. And then the Oklahoma State OU game was great. I agree with you. I think if Oklahoma State wins the Big 12, they absolutely should be in the championship game. I think if Alabama somehow beats Georgia, then it's Michigan, Georgia, Alabama, and Oklahoma State. And I don't think Cincinnati deserves a seat at the table in that case. But it was a great Saturday. And then it followed up with a Sunday of coaching carousel already starting up. The hot seat, guys getting fired, guys getting hired, guys leaving. It's right now, I would say college football was kind of king for the weekend.
I would agree with that. The thing about your Alabama – If the team that we have seen over the last month, that is Alabama right now. If that name, if that school is not Alabama, people say this team is a fifth to tenth team in the country type of that. The name of Alabama is keeping them up there because against Arkansas they got. They went into a shootout. Now against Auburn, they couldn't do anything. And they got lucky. The Auburn running back ran out of bounds and saved 40 seconds for them. That gave them enough time to drive down the field. Yeah, they made the play when they needed to. But you had 3 points for pretty much the first 58, 59 and a half minutes of the game. I just really don't. Like, I just think that it's everyone's just caught up in the, oh, it's Alabama. And yeah, I thought Alabama was going to go drive down the field and score a touchdown at the end, but they're just not good. Like, as you said, the offensive line play has been horrible. And if Auburn's defensive line did that, which they always get good guys on the defensive line. What is Georgia going to be able to do? Bryce Young's never going to have any time to throw the ball. And I just don't think that they're, I think it's the name catching people off guard or thinking that they're something still now that they're not. I just don't think that they're just a big time flawed team. And now I say this, and they'll probably go ahead and beat Georgia because that's what college football is. It's crazy. And that happens. But I just don't think they're very good. I just don't think they're very good. All right. So before we get into the coaching thing, I want to throw this scenario out for you. Who gets in, excuse me, if all of this happens? We could do this again on Thursday, more of them. But this is the scenario that I want to throw out. Hold on. Let me pull up. So it starts off with Georgia. They are going to be beating Alabama. This is what I call the maximum chaos scenario. Georgia beats Alabama. So Alabama's out, or you would think that they are out.
Yeah, no, they would be.
Iowa then goes on and beats Michigan. So then Michigan, see you later. If we're really going maximum chaos, then Houston beats Cincinnati. Goodbye, adios, see you later. Then Baylor beats Oklahoma State. So now we have a 0-1 loss conference champions. The only other team that would have one loss in college football this year, there would be two. One, a conference champion, Houston, would be 12-1, but they're not making the jump from 16 into the top four. And then you would have Notre Dame be the other one. So would you assume that Notre Dame just slides right in there?
I would, yeah. I would agree. I would say that they probably would. Yeah, they'd probably slide in. And then it would probably be
Ohio State and Alabama. Are those the two best two-loss teams in the country? Do they take a two-loss Baylor Big 12 champion over Ohio State or Alabama?
I think if Michigan loses, I think you have to take them over Ohio State because they beat Ohio State. You have to. I mean, you can't make an argument for you not playing in the conference championship should not be, and having to play an extra game should not be a bonus or should not give you a leg up. So if Michigan loses, I would still keep them in if everybody else loses. So if we don't have any other one loss teams, I think Michigan gets in. I think Notre Dame gets in, and maybe Baylor, if they won the Big 12, maybe them. So I think that's maybe who the top four could be if we had maximum chaos of everybody, all the favorites, quote unquote, losing the conference championship.
Or does Oregon get in if they win the Pac-12?
No, Oregon's.
Well, they're a two-loss conference champion, and then they might have to swing them in.
Since they'll be a two-loss conference champion, maybe.
But then the Baylors would be a two-loss conference champion. So you're going on the same thing.
Yeah, true. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I don't know. That would be interesting to see. Unfortunately, that we always root for that, but I don't think that would be the case. But I just don't see that happening. I want to go back to something that you said earlier, though, about if those jerseys didn't say Alabama, would they still be in the top four? You know, because you'd say this team is, you know, between 5 to 10 with the way they're playing. And as crazy as this may sound, if those jerseys don't say Cincinnati, are they a top four team? Or because of what they've done and what Luke Fickell's done the last couple of years, now I know you're only supposed to go based off of this year, but is the committee going off of, well, they went undefeated last year, they had a good season the season before that. So now, because it's Cincinnati who's played well the last 2 years, even though you're only supposed to go off of this year, is that why they're in the top four?
I think they'd still be in the top four, yeah.
Look at Houston. Houston's in the same conference and they have one loss and they're 16. So you're saying that because going undefeated in the American Conference, that puts you in the top four?
Well, they beat a top 10 team on the road.
Notre Dame, right. Which is fine.
What does Houston have?
Houston's best win
is at home against SMU.
Yeah, probably. But it's still nonetheless Okay, so see, that's why I was asking the question. Do you think that anything has to do with, I mean, that's their best win is Notre Dame. Indiana stinks. One good win is going to put you in the top four. I know it's a top 10 team. It's a top 10 team. I get it. But one top 10 win is going to put you in as a group of five conference, a team in a group of five conference.
I obviously it has. Yeah, I think it's not their fault Indiana's bad this year. Right. And they beat them. I mean, they've had a ton of quarterback injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And usually UCF is pretty good. They've been pretty bad since Scott Frost lost. SMU before the past weeks has been they've been pretty good, but they've obviously with the Sonny Dykes saga, they've clearly had issues with them. So they've lost four of their last five, and go look at that when the rumors for him to be the new TCU coach started. I think we would have a big correlation with that. But yeah, I think, excuse me, I think Cincinnati would still probably be up there.
Okay.
You really just don't like Cincinnati.
I mean, it has nothing to do with Cincinnati. I just feel like when your conference isn't as strong, the teams you play isn't as strong as what some of these other teams are facing week in and week out. I just don't know that you belong at the big boys table.
So has Clemson always belong at the big boy table when the ACC has been horrible, or were they just number two? Well, that's the same logic. Look at who they beat last year. I know they blew them. They dominated them, or they would blow them out. But I mean, they were terrible. Wake Forest was ranked number eight at the beginning of this or the first rankings. One spot around Cincinnati are in the same spot, and that Wake Forest hadn't played anybody. So what is isn't that the same thing? I mean, they went undefeated.
Wake Forest?
Yeah, Wake Forest in the first rankings was undefeated. They were what? Nine.
Right, they were undefeated.
Cincinnati was six.
Who they played? They hadn't played anybody. But
well, that's the same thing. Cincinnati had a better win then.
But when you're a Power Five conference, technically these teams should be better, right? I mean, granted, I know they're not always. You know, Florida State, they stunk this year. Clemson was bad. They're playing better now, but they're not anywhere near the Clemson teams that obviously we come used to. They lost three games. And even in their wins, they haven't been super dominant until as recently. So the thing is, the by and large, the conference of the ACC is usually better than the American conference. If you take the top teams versus the top teams, you know, whatever you want to, however you want to do it, that ACC conference is usually better or as you know, has better teams than the American conference. Now, Cincinnati's doing good by going to the Big 12 and going to a big Power Five conference. Then you can finally start saying, hey, if we can run the table, yeah, we definitely belong. And we've belonged this entire time. And you can prove guys like me and others that have, you know, kind of doubted them a little bit wrong.
Okay,
like
so
I said, it has nothing to do with me not liking Cincinnati. It's great what they're doing. Luke Fickell's done a great job out there. But until you're playing a Power Five conference schedule, then I don't think that you belong. If Cincinnati stays at, what are they right now, four?
I think so.
If they play Georgia.
Four.
If they play Georgia, what is the outcome?
They played them
game?
Last year.
This year. This year's dominant Georgia team. I don't care what happened last year. This year, this team is far superior to Georgia's team last year. Would you not agree?
Yes.
Okay, so this year, if they play Georgia, what are their chances of winning?
Probably slim, but whose chances are good of beating Georgia this year?
Alabama?
No, they're not. They're not. Alabama's chances are not good against beating Georgia. I think the bowling team that had a chance against, you're going to say homer alert, but Ohio State, because they had the offense to compete with the Georgia defense that could have matched up with them with the receivers and everything. Other than that, I don't really see an offense out there that's going to be able to go against the Georgia defense. Like, Georgia's clearly high enough, or is far and away the best team. Nobody else is really close to them.
Yeah, no, so they're definitely playing the best. Yeah, no, agreed.
So the S&P, the SB Plus rankings, it's Bill Connolly's rankings that he's been doing for years on ESPN.com now. It's offense, defense rating, and special teams. Here is the top 10 of his S&P plus or SP plus rankings. Georgia's 1, Ohio State's 2. This is after this week. Alabama 3, Michigan 4, Cincinnati 5, Texas A&M 6, Notre Dame 7, Wisconsin number 8, Clemson number 9, Tennessee 10. That's the top 10. Then the 11 through 15 is Pittsburgh, NC State, Ole Miss, Oklahoma State, and Penn State. I mean, that's one guy's rankings, but if you want to go through, it goes through offensive rating, which Cincinnati's offensive efficiency rating is 13th in the country. Their defense is 10th, and then their special teams is pretty bad at 72nd. But they're a top 15 in offense and defense's efficiency throughout the season.
Playing a bunch of cupcakes. They have one good win against
Notre Dame. Can't control what conference they're in. But so you ask for more numbers, and they give them, and still these ratings bring in strength of opponent and strength of your victories and everything along that. They don't just put them in. They do that.
They factor and in the fact fifth. That they're playing a cupcake team.
It brings in strength of opponent and all this stuff in that, and how bad you beat it, how large your margin of victory is on that. It's not just, oh, South Florida, they win this. No, it brings into how poor South Florida is or how poor Indiana is. It brings all that in there.
That's fine. I get it. I never once have I said that Cincinnati is not a good football team. They are a good football team. I just don't think they belong with the big boys. That's all I'm saying.
No group of five teams should ever be allowed with the big boys.
Correct.
Why?
Because when it comes down to playing the game on the field, they never have a shot. What do we always talk about? When it's a good football team versus a good football team, who wins? Usually the team with the better athletes. And 9 times out of 10, maybe 90 times out of 100, the group of five team is going to have the inferior athletes to the power five team.
So just because they're a group of five school, they shouldn't have any chance to be in the college football playoff.
Unless your non-conference schedule is nothing but power five guys at the, you know, top, let's say 40 in the nation. No.
But what school is going to go out and schedule Cincinnati right now? That's a power five team in their non-conference. Nobody.
True.
Because the probability of them losing is higher. So then they're at a disadvantage.
Agreed. No, I agree. But still, then that's why I said Cincinnati's doing a good job of going to the Big 12 so that they can earn their seat at the table.
But they're in a watered down Big 12. And then you're just going to say, oh, well, they don't have to beat Oklahoma. They don't have to beat Texas. The Big 12 isn't as good as it is. And they beat a watered down version.
You could almost make the argument that the Big 12 is going to be better as a whole versus being as top heavy. I mean, look at Oklahoma State. They're playing much better. Obviously Baylor, they're playing much better. Houston, look at Houston and Cincinnati coming in now too. Who are the other teams that are coming in? BYU. BYU had a very good year. So you could make the argument that the Big 12 is getting better top to bottom, won't be so top heavy. And now Texas might be lucky to win 4 games in the SEC in the next 2 or 3 years. And then OU, they should pick up where they leave off. Who knows? Let's see who the coach is. But they may not be sticking around at the top of the table like they're used to once they head over to the SEC. So, you know, it could be more evenly matched, I guess, is the better word for what the Big 12 is going to be.
I mean, yeah, Oklahoma's probably not going to have the same success they had in the Big 12 as they did in the SEC. I don't think that's really going on a limb on saying anything there. They literally ran the Big 12 for the last, 10 years?
Yeah.
So I don't think anyone thinks they're going to go run the SEC. But I just don't understand why you are so against a group of five team that has shown now this year that they went 12-0. Last year as well, that last year, I know last year shouldn't mean anything, but last year was not a fluke, and they're still a good team. I know it was a weird year and everything. People were struggling. Lose to Georgia by 3 points. Yes, some guys were out and everything in the Peach Bowl. And then you're just going to be like, oh, you know what? This team, not good. not good. They don't.
I never said they weren't good. Bad. You're getting that confused. I never.
But
said
you're saying their schedule. I don't care. They play who they play. It's not their fault. Every other team in their conference stinks. We've been saying this about Clemson. Clemson has played nobody for the last 5 years. But since they're Clemson, they get a bunch of five stars. We just put them up there at number two. It happened this year, and you know what?
And
we
did
got
they win
fooled
any, did,
they
and did they win any national championships? Did they
won.
Win any national championships?
They won
okay.
one.
They still.
What
they,
if Cincinnati
okay.
goes and, on and win the national title this year?
Well, then I will. Then I'll look like a bozo, and I will be the first one to admit it. But they're not getting past that semifinal game. If they
could beat Michigan, they could beat Michigan.
Now we'll see. I mean, we'll see. But I've never once said Cincinnati is not a good football team. In fact, I've said that just this show numerous times. They are a good football team. I don't think they deserve to play a Power Five.
So did Boise State ever belong in the BCS championship, or if when they were number three and got left out? A couple years, whenever that was in the BCS, and we would have the playoff. Would you have been saying the same thing about Boise State?
Probably.
I doubt it. I think this is just a ridiculous thing. Why even play football then? I know you did have your whole group of five thing. Why even play?
It just doesn't make sense. I could say the exact same thing to you when you're saying how good Georgia is and how they're just going to steamroll anybody they play. Then why play? Just crown them right now.
But you still play the games.
I know. Let's play them. And when Cincinnati gets steamrolled, I'll be sitting here saying, look, I told you so.
But so Cincinnati
and
gets.
Look, I get it. A lot of the semifinals have been blown.
Yes.
I get it. I know 100%. I recognize that and I agree. But you got to admit, when it's a group of five going against a Power Five, it just looks different because it's like, look, these guys did not belong on the field with them.
I'm not going to say they don't belong on the field with them because they went to Notre Dame and beat them this year.
Yeah. No, that's fine.
I'm not going to go and say that. Once you say Cincinnati is the best group of five team that's probably ever happened.
Ever? Nah.
Yes.
I mean, you put them up there, sure. I mean, I'd have to go through and look. I can't give a definitive answer, but they're probably right up there. Yeah, no problem. You know, I could probably say that.
I think they're probably – so why not give them a chance? Since all the playoffs are usually blowouts anyways, why not get – doesn't everybody want new blood? Doesn't everyone want new blood in there? Here's some new blood. What if the playoff game is Cincinnati versus Oklahoma State? You don't think they got any chance in that? And again, I'm not saying that Cincinnati is going to beat Michigan. I think they have Michigan and Oklahoma State are probably the two best teams. Or if they get a rematch against Notre Dame, I'd love to see a rematch against Notre Dame because Notre Dame is playing a lot better right now than they were when they played Cincinnati. If they could, those are probably the three best teams that they have a chance to beat. Why not see it so we could settle the whole thing? Because it's ridiculous. Why not have them in there and play? We watch. How many blowouts have we seen? I'd rather watch Cincinnati get blown out than have Notre Dame get blown up by whoever they do. They get blown out every single time they go in the playoff. Same thing with whatever. Last year, Clemson got blown out. You see blowouts all the time in these things. Who did Alabama blow? Oklahoma gets blown out every single year when they go into the playoff. They stand no chance. All these Power Five teams have no chance when they go in there. They get steamrolled. Why not let Cincinnati get steamrolled if they go in there? Who cares? It's not like these games are great.
Fair. Yeah, very fair point.
All right. Now the coaching carousel. Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley goes over to USC. Shock move. Everyone thought LSU, but he didn't lie. He said he wasn't going to be the coach at LSU. He's not wrong there. Goes to USC. People are always dodging the SEC. He might. He might also want a new challenge. He might want to go. Excuse me. He might want to go to USC. Try and revitalize that program. I don't know. All I know is it's a shocking move that he's going to USC. And he's going to probably be in the same spot he was at Oklahoma when they were in the Big 12. He gets that Malachi Newman committing to him, and they go and they start running the Pac-12. I think it's a good move. And also, look, why would you not want to live in LA after you lived in Norman, Oklahoma for so long?
Yeah, I think it's a great move for Lincoln Riley. You know, people are kind of busting his balls and saying that he was dodging the SEC and dodging having to go play in the SEC. Why not? I mean, why? Like, yeah, you see OU, you know, the ups and downs they've had with Spencer Rattler, now with Caleb Williams in the Big 12. Now you're going to go to the SEC and have to play, you know, some of the big dogs that, you know, we've talked about that are in the mix every single year, your Georgias, your Alabamas, your LSUs when things are right. You know, whoever it may be, even throwing the Mississippi schools in there, you know, they find a way to get a little squirrely every now and then. Auburn is you know, can be pretty good at times. So why not go, like you said, go run the Pac-12, go live in LA, go be the king at USC. And you, I mean, we've seen guys time and time again, leave schools or go to USC and it just not work. But I think the way Lincoln Riley coaches, the kind of players he recruits, I mean, he's big recruiting out of California right now anyway, that whole region, California, Arizona, he's kind of honed in on and brought a lot of guys out to OU. So the way he coaches and his style, I think, fits perfectly for the Pac-12. It fits perfectly for the type of athletes and guys that they'll be able to get at USC. And I thought his next move might be to the NFL, but if you can go run USC and be the king of the Pac-12 after doing that in the Big 12 with OU for the last few years, then he can literally handpick his next job as long as everything goes well at USC. And I even think if they go mediocre, it's still going to be, you know, Lincoln Riley who did these great things, and he'll be able to have another shot somewhere else to coach well. So I think it was a great move for him in his career. I haven't seen the number of what he's going to get paid, but he's probably going to get a big bag. And, you know, the chance to multiply that as long as he sees some success.
But as Lincoln, okay, didn't I say that this year was a big year for Lincoln Riley on the Proving Ground? Because
probably.
Because he hasn't won a playoff game.
Yeah.
He's gone to it every year except last year as the coach of Oklahoma. So for 4 years, lost every game, and they weren't particularly close. And he's had the easy run going on in the Big 12. And then this year, obviously, they have struggled. And we were wondering why this team has struggled. Well, I think we know that he was probably snooping around for other jobs once it was announced that they were going to the SEC, because it didn't seem like he wanted OU to go to the SEC. You liked his spot there. So they struggle. Things aren't right. I think that's probably the reason why. And now he goes to USC. And yeah, he's been great beating up on the Big 12, but he's still, again, never won a playoff game. I think he's a good offensive mind, a great scheme, and he's obviously kept the Oklahoma program running, or maybe even taking it to higher heights, definitely getting more Heisman. He had 3 Heisman Trophy winners in a row. So he's been able to do that with the quarterbacks. But from like a winning, he never won a playoff game or never won a national title. I think that's kind of a standard at Oklahoma, you would hope. And he didn't do that. I'm not saying it's not a good hire for USC. I think it's great. And I'm so excited to watch what he does out there with all that talent to recruit and everything. But the whole like, oh, savior, he's a savior, blah, 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 this and that. I mean, he's a really good football coach and has a good program, but maybe we're a little jumping the gun on Lincoln Riley right now. I don't know. I think it's going to work out well, but he's done pretty much the most he's been able to do at Oklahoma, I think. And that's also why I think he's moving to USC, because he probably thinks he can win a couple more playoff games and maybe win a national title at USC.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, too. You said he did, you know, kind of the most he could at OU. Think about it, but he just gets SC back to like the top of the Pac-12. I mean, I'm not going to say job done, but you know, that's I think the bar for what success is at USC right now has been lowered significantly than it was back during, you know, obviously like the Pete Carroll days and all that. So if he even gets them in the mix in the top 5, top 6, or even in the playoff committee talks, I think it's, you know, a lot of guys are going to see that as a success. Yeah, definitely go to a playoff game, maybe even win one. That'll be, you know, I think icing on the cake. And obviously if he's able to win a championship, that'll be huge as well. I think that's kind of pie in the sky dreams for SC is winning a national championship. But if they can be in the mix for a few years in a row, I think he'll be, you know, hailed as a USC great.
Yo, yeah, I think so. Oklahoma hasn't won a national championship in 21 years. Right. Last time they won it was 2000.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they got steamrolled by USC in one of those, and then, I mean, I don't think they've made it since then. Like, they haven't been really others. I mean, even since 1980, they've won 2. I know. Yeah. I mean, no one goes back there, but it's not like they've been really. They're a national brand just because the Big 12 is bad.
Yeah.
They did get. Yeah, 2003 was the last time they lost in the national championship game. But no, it's going to be interesting. And then who they get is going to be interesting. Who LSU gets. They should probably look at Baylor, Dave Aranda, I think, if I was LSU. I don't know. There's definitely interesting times right now in the coaching carousel. Love a good coaching carousel, which we are in the middle right now.
Yeah, Florida hires Bill Napier out of Louisiana.
Yeah.
They were talking about maybe him going to LSU, but I'd also heard Bruce Feldman talking and said that the LSU kind of guys that run the show, you know, the pocketbooks, they weren't going to allow that for whatever reason, a guy coming from Louisiana coming to LSU. So he goes over to Florida. Dan Mullen's out there. We'll see where he goes. Maybe if, you know, I don't know if he stays in the SEC. I probably don't see him staying in the SEC. Would you agree? I mean, there's maybe going to OU, who knows, but Dan Mullen, just the way as bad as things went so quickly at Florida, which he was only in his fourth year. I was surprised that they canned him as quickly as they did. Cause he had had some good years there, but, so he's, you know, obviously a name that's to be on the lookout for. Dan Campbell out of Iowa State, Luke Fickell. I don't think he's going to go anywhere. I think he wants to try to finish the job here at Cincinnati, but yeah, a lot of good coaching spots open and a lot of good coaches out there.
Yeah, no, Miami's open too.
Oh, did they fire Manny Diaz?
Well, they think it's going to, potentially be open. Sorry. Virginia Tech. Be open. Virginia Tech. I mean, a lot of good spots. A lot of good spots out there. I mean, it's going to be interesting. Yeah, I know for sure what all goes down with all the big names going out there. That is for sure. But we'll talk more about that coming up on Thursday and as we go forward here in the college football offseason. I mean, one thing I do have to say. Let me tell you, the MAC East winners, Kent State. Let me tell you, that was a barn burner of a game on Saturday. Overtime, they kind of blew it. The old 2-point conversion stopped to win. A beauty. If a coach out there, Sean Lewis, they should go out and get Sean Lewis because he's a young, energetic, high offense. I mean, obviously it's probably a big step for Oklahoma, LSU. There's no way that's going to fly. They're not going to hire him. But you get a little lower level power five, I'd be all over him there. But yeah, good college football day. All around, it was funny. So we went over my cousin's house on Saturday to watch the Ohio State game. And then to watch the Alabama game because he went to Bama. My cousin who went to Michigan didn't go over there to watch the Ohio State game. He came in later and he was very excited, obviously. But my aunts.
Wait, let me ask. Did he have other plans or did he just not go over there because he thought maybe things were going to go well for Michigan?
No, he watched with his Michigan friends. But
oh, okay. That's
we were also like knowing he wasn't going to watch the game there.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't.
Because I was going to say if he just wasn't there because he thought things weren't going to go great for Michigan and then he comes in showboating, I'd been like, no, buddy. No. You weren't here before, but if he was just out watching with his Michigan buddies, then that's totally fair game.
Yeah, no, and even if he thought Michigan was gonna get killed, he wasn't gonna go over there to watch it anyways. He would just come after. But because my aunts went, a couple of my aunts went there, but we were watching the Bama game, and my cousin's husband was he was getting frustrated, but he was putting on a good face because the company he had company over and everything. The funniest thing was my aunt's boyfriend, who really is not into sports at all. Like, he jokes looking at the TV, goes, oh, you guys watching hockey when the football game's on and stuff like that. Not saying he won't watch a football game, but he's not a sports guy.
Yeah.
So he starts watching with us, I think in about like the late third quarter, maybe start of the fourth quarter. And we're watching and there's like 2 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. And my aunt comes and goes, he goes, when do you want to leave? And he pulled when the game is over. And she just starts laughing because she never thought that you would hear him say that. I want to wait till the end of the game is over. And then everybody, when the touchdown happens, comes in and we're explaining the overtime. The new overtime rules also stink.
Stink.
Like that two-point conversion at the third overtime is bad. It's so bad. But everybody were like, well, I was like, the first overtime is regular. The second one is the 25, but they have to go for two. And then now we're just doing like one play, blah, 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 this and that. And then also the Auburn game, So I said the kid ran out of bounds, cost him the game. Why do they not go for two after that touchdown in the first overtime?
Because you're at home.
But you're not going to be able to beat you are lucky. I thought you were lucky that you scored a touchdown in the first overtime. You blew the game. You do not have the horses. Your quarterback is on one leg. Go for the win on one play. That's a better chance you're going to get than playing another overtime or going to triple overtime or quadruple overtime. Like, go for two there. It doesn't. Just do it. Just do it. That's what I thought they should have done.
I mean, I get it. But, you know, the book, if you will, says you don't go for two unless you're on the road.
Well, I don't think the book matters in that point. So you always rag on analytics or the book, and you're like, how about have some feel for the game? That was a feel of the game of go for two.
No, I agree. But you ask, why don't you? And that's why. I mean, it's taking maybe an unnecessary risk when it's just like, hey, let's just tie it up and keep things going.
But they're 6-5. What's the risk? The positives. The only negatives is you lose. You don't make it and you lose, which ended up happening anyways. And the probability was probably always going to happen. The positives they outweigh whatever negative there is. I think. I don't know. I thought that was so dumb that they didn't go for two earlier in the or after the first overtime, because you could tell that they weren't going to be able to keep up there. But all right, let's go to the NFL. Also, big breaking news right now in the NFL. The Cowboys, major COVID issues. Mike McCarthy out Thursday night with COVID, and there are up to eight positives right now in Dallas, potentially more. Ongoing. I wonder, we haven't had a game postponed this season. I wonder, maybe this game gets moved back off of Thursday night, depending on what happens here. But a lot of COVID issues right now in Dallas leading up to this week. And then they had the big game on Thanksgiving where they lost against the Raiders. Things since Cooper Rush came in against Minnesota haven't gone well. They're 1-3. Things just, they do not seem right for some reason. But issues right now mounting with the Cowboys.
Yeah, that's insane. You know, obviously they were missing three coaches this week against the Raiders. Amari Cooper, they ended up not having CD because of COVID as well, because he cleared concussion
protocol. No, they kept him out due to concussion.
Oh, I thought he cleared concussion protocol.
No.
I thought at the beginning of the year they said that they weren't going to postpone any games or move any games back, that if you weren't able to play them, that it would just go down as a forfeit. Was that incorrect?
No, they didn't say they wouldn't postpone them or move them. They just said if you weren't able to play them, which is probably do like another Wednesday debacle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they said that there was a postponement, that if if you weren't going to be able to play it. They didn't say that they wouldn't postpone them, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They just said if you weren't able to play.
Yeah. So, that's going to be a backbreaker for, like you said, a team that's reeling right now. In the Cowboys, things are, you know, started off really, really good, and they've just kind of gotten progressively worse. When you thought Cooper Rush coming and playing during the Vikings game was the worst that your season, worst thing happened to your season, he ends up winning that game. And like you said, they lose three after that. It's tough sledding for them right now, and they got to figure it out. And looks like things are only getting worse.
Well, the thing, too, about them is they feasted on a bunch of turnovers. That's how the defense was playing so well. But now the defense the turnovers are drying up a little bit. I mean, they're not getting three or four a game. We always talk about the NFL a week-to-week league, and it pretty much is. But That game on Thursday was the most Raiders game of all time. They lose three in a row. They got all the stuff going on that they had. They were struggling. And then they come into Dallas and beat them. Like, if that isn't a Raiders game, I mean, that's if you've followed the Raiders at all the last, what, 3 years, three, 4 years, I don't think you would be surprised that they went in and won that game. Even really the NFL, but that was not, I was not surprised by that.
Yeah, that was, you know, some of the best offensive plays that the Raiders had were those pass interference calls on Anthony Brown, yes. Which two of them were legit. That one in the end zone, I don't think was pass interference. And then there was one other one where it was kind of iffy, but it was because he didn't turn his head around. So that's exactly why they flagged him. You feel sorry for a guy like that. I mean, they keep showing him and it's like, you know, you're just like, fuck, man, on Thanksgiving, everybody's watching. You got these big penalties that are costing your team big time. And, the Cowboys, I mean, they didn't help their cause either. What, they have 14 penalties for 166 yards, something like that. I mean, absolutely brutal. So when you're, you know, when one team is getting a bunch of penalties, because I believe the Raiders had 14 for like maybe 115 yards, something of the sorts, you know, you got to try to be able to take advantage of that. And the Cowboys just kept shooting themselves in the foot time and time again by getting unnecessary penalties. But, you know, so like you said, it was a typical Raiders game, very much so. And I think it was a very typical Cowboys loss where it's like, you know, that you're expected to win. You're expected to play, you know, pretty well against a team that's average or just above or below, either one way or the other. You could probably say for the Raiders. And then you just kind of, you know, you play well, but you don't play as good as you should have or as good as you could have. And you end up on the losing end of a game-winning field goal.
I mean, it is tough. The offense has clearly struggled the last 2 weeks without Cooper and CeeDee Lamb.
Michael Gallup is still a very good, very, very good wide receiver, I think. And when you don't have those two big guys, absolutely. And then Zeke's kind of taking a step back from where he started the first 4 or 5 weeks. He's obviously banged up. Tony Pollard's still playing well. But there's a lot of throws now that Dak, too, is just missing, where he's just throwing the ball at guys' feet or overthrowing guys. He's missed a lot of throws recently in the last few weeks that you weren't seeing him miss, you know, prior to that.
Yeah, but Michael Gallup is a guy where I don't think anyone thinks he's a number one receiver. He's a very, very good receiver. Yeah. He's a very, very good receiver, but with Lamb and Cooper out, he's got to be the guy.
Right.
And like Cedric Wilson, he fits in perfect, I think, in like the number two role or potentially the three role. But as a fourth guy, he's amazing. He's a great fourth receiver. So it just guys get stepped up on the
a good backup quarterback.
Huh?
A good backup quarterback too.
Cedric Wilson?
Yeah.
Yes. But guys get out of their roles, and not saying they can't do that, but like the whole Cowboys offense is CeeDee Lamb, Gallup, and Cooper. Like, wow, these guys are so good. Everybody's open because of those guys. Mm-hmm. Without two of those, you're really going to struggle, or it's going to be tougher. One of them plays, or if two of the three play, you're probably going to be in good shape, but, now they're in trouble. This week they play the Saints. Look, the Saints are bad. They're really bad. Really, really bad. So they should be able to beat them, even though it's on the road. But then without who's COVID, you don't know.
I gotta say this about the Saints. Not to change the subject or cut you off, but how bad is Taysom Hill at quarterback when they wouldn't put him in for Marcus?
But I think he was hurt.
Trevor Siemian.
Didn't they say he was active. Hurt on Thursday?
No, he was active.
I know, but I think they said he came up with like a shoulder or something. I remember them hearing because he didn't even put his helmet on. He had the earpiece in all game. I think they said he was hurt or something. I know he was active, but I think they said he was hurt.
Okay. All right. Let's see. I didn't know that. I saw that he was active. And so when I saw how bad Trevor Siemian was playing, I was just like, how bad is this guy at quarterback that Sean Payton won't even give him a shot to go in there to throw the ball, you know, not just take the snap and try to run forward for 3 or 4 yards.
No, look, I agree, because I said, why is Taysom not in there? But then they panned to him. They're like, yeah, he's got an injury or something. Let me tell you, my cousin and I were on a next to score barrage on that Thursday night game. Talk about getting an electric atmosphere on Thanksgiving. You hit Dawson Knox first to score. I was unable to do next score touchdown. I didn't have that, but I did anytime touchdown. You hit Diggs, then hit Dawson Knox again. So three in a row. It was pretty pretty electric. That gets the other family members peeking over in the TV room, asking.
I was gonna say,
what's going on there?
That starts getting everybody kind of riled up a little bit. See what's going on.
Yes, yes, it gets some excitement out there. That is for sure. But elsewhere, around the NFL yesterday, the Bengals, the Steelers are dead. Big Ben needs to retire right now. He stinks. I will say this: looks the. I don't think any team. I don't think a team in the AFC North wins a playoff game this year. I just don't think the AFC North is that good. The Ravens at 8-3, that's got to be the fraudest of 8-3s I've ever seen. I've been saying for a while the Ravens are bad, or they're not what their record is. Continue to believe that. That is the fraudiest of 8-3s out there. I know they're what, like the 2 seed or something. Or I think they're the 1 seed because they've Tennessee and New England haven't had their bye week yet, but Baltimore at 8-3 is the fraudiest of 8-3s out there.
Yeah, last night's game was ugly. Oh, ugly, yeah. Ugly. It was brutal to watch, but they weren't very good. Baker looked better, but they still have a lot of issues they got to sort out.
They don't have any receivers that can get open.
The Baker situation reminds me very similar to the Kirk Cousins Washington situation of like, yeah, look, we have this guy and he's not bad. He's not great, but do we really want to pay him starting quarterback money? Or could we go out there and find somebody else that could be maybe not as good, maybe could be as good, definitely not better, but not as expensive. You know what I mean? Like you have all these different things, all these different variables that you could be going for. So that really reminds me of kind of the Kirk Cousins Washington situation with Baker right now, because I feel like there's a good divide of pro Baker and anti Baker fans in Cleveland, just like there were in Washington of pro Kirk and anti Kirk. So that situation unfolding is going to be very, very interesting. I think Stefanski is still a very good coach. I think he's going to be around for the long haul, but yeah, that's just, they got to figure something out there with the offense to get some better pieces, either around Baker or get better pieces in place of Baker. One of the two, because the running game is solidified. The running game and the offensive line, when healthy, as good as you can get. But Jarvis Landry, obviously still a very good wide receiver. Tight end situation, I think probably still needs to get solidified a little bit more outside of Austin Hooper and Njoku. But I think once they kind of figure out what they're doing at that quarterback spot, then you can really see where this Cleveland team might be able to go.
Well, I think people were saying that Harrison Bryant, when he got hurt, things went bad on the offense. That's not what you want when your third tight end goes out. You should be able to overcome that. But I think the whole Baker situation this year is a big asterisk on it because he's hurt. Like the sad thing is that yesterday he actually played he played better than he did against the Lions. He played better than he did against the Patriots. And then who did they play before the Patriots? I got to look. That's been his best game in the last. And then he played the Bills when they killed the Bengals. That's been his best game since in the last 2 weeks. Like, he actually looked good. He looked decent enough. So he's got the labrum thing. He's got the foot thing. He's hurt. He's battling out. As I said, I sound like a broken record. But like this year is just an asterisk with Baker because he's not good because he's hurt and he's playing with a torn labrum. I know it's his non-throwing shoulder, but think about that. He's playing with a torn labrum in his shoulder. Like that is pretty ridiculous. And he's making some good throws. He made good throws over the middle of the field, but then he makes some good throws on the edge and guys drop the ball and then you're done. It's just like if he makes a bad throw, he makes a bad throw, but then he makes a good one and the guy drops it. Like, yeah, some of the stuff he's not making good decisions here and there, but it's just, I don't know. There's a lot going on there, but I bet your cousin was texting about JOK last night.
Yes.
Was he not?
JOK
was all over the place.
All over the place. Yeah. And I mean, it didn't make matters any better that the broadcast kept talking about how good he was. It's just like,
he was phenomenal.
He was. He was literally, sideline to sideline, doing everything that they asked of him and then some. But yeah, it's not only were Joe and I texting about it, but on the Washington Twitterverse, things were just absolutely blowing up. People were like, Micah Parsons is going to be defensive rookie of the year. JOK looks like an absolute superstar. And we have a linebacker with really good character. And I thought that was pretty funny as somebody put it. I was like, he's gotten better. Jamin Davis has played better.
Yeah, it sucks when you see a guy that you had a chance to take at a position that you need just absolutely light it up.
I mean, that's why last night was why the Browns drafted him, to stop Lamar Jackson.
And yeah, that's what they said. When they drafted him, they had one guy in mind. It's, hey, just stop Lamar.
And he did that. He did a damn good job of that. All right, a couple other things elsewhere. Ever since that Browns game, everything always comes back to the Browns, whether you like it or not. The Chargers stink. Okay, I shouldn't say stink.
They are very average.
Very average. Justin Herbert, everybody claimed MVP after that Browns game. He's been very poor since then. And I think I said it then, after that Browns game when he lit him up and played well. I was going to say, I think everybody's, maybe I said it then, this was a tough day to say it after that, but I was like, Justin Herbert, look, I think he's very good, but he played out of his mind that game. Don't think that's what he was. My biggest thing is now he hasn't been throwing a lot of deep balls lately, but he always overthrows the deep ball. He's got to figure that out, but he's been very poor. He's been really bad. I don't know what's going on with the Chargers. The Chargers just are not. They're an average team. They are an average. They're in the AFC where it's you're 6-5, 7-4. Kind of everybody is average. If you ask me to say who the best team with 6 wins in the AFC is, I'll tell you it's the Indianapolis Colts. They're the best team with 6 wins in the AFC right now.
They're definitely playing the best of any team with 6 wins. You know, I obviously would still maybe lean towards Buffalo, even though they've been shaky at times. But I guess Buffalo has 7 wins. Yep, you're right. I forgot they played on Thursday and won. You're right. It's definitely got to be the Colts. They're definitely better than the Chargers and Vegas. I would put them ahead of Cleveland as well. Yeah, you're right.
Oh, agreed.
Those 5 teams. Yeah, no, Indianapolis is absolutely playing the best of any team with 6 wins. And they had a tough loss against the Patriots this week. You know, they played well. Jonathan Taylor really didn't get going for that second half. Or excuse me, the Bucks. Yes, the Bucks. I'm sorry. Against the Bucks. Jonathan Taylor really didn't get going to that second half, but you know, they had a good showing and still hung tough. I don't want to dog on Carson Wentz because he's played really well. But if they could just get maybe that extra step out of him, kind of like he was his first 2 years in Philadelphia, then this team would really be something to reckon with.
Yeah, no, I think they're going to make the playoffs. I think they're playing well. They've had a tough schedule. They've had some bad breaks here and there, but their schedule, they got the Texans, they got the Texans, Patriots, Cardinals, Raiders, and Jaguars. I think they're going to. It might only take 9 wins to get in the. You might need to be 8-9 in the AFC to make the playoffs, I think, because everyone's going to beat up on each other. Mm-hmm. But which would be pretty wild. But I think they're going to make the playoffs. And then shout out Odell finally paying off financially to me on backing him with that touchdown. You know, it was pretty funny. I said before that touchdown. So we were kind of watching in and out my aunt's house right now. We got a 3,000 piece puzzle we're all working on. A Marvel puzzle, which, let me tell you, very, very hard puzzle. And, you know, Odell had those, like, what, pink shoes on in the first half?
Mm-hmm.
Then in the second half, he changed them to black shoes. And I looked at the game, and I was like, man, Odell's not even in the game right now. This stinks. And that was when he caught the touchdown with the black shoes, didn't notice it. But shout out Odell doing that. But would you have to say, who's your Super Bowl favorite, the Packers?
I was going to ask you the exact same question. I have no idea. Draw a name out. I wouldn't even put them in there yet. The defense is playing well for sure, but yeah, I don't know. I have no idea.
I think it's the Packers. I think they're the Super Bowl favorite. I really do. I'd say the Bucks.
Yeah. I mean, the Bucks. The Bucks, yeah, I mean, as long as everyone's healthy on their defense, I think they'll be fine. It's just crazy how different they play with Antonio Brown not being in that offense. It's wild. Obviously, Gronk being back yesterday helped them quite a bit. He had over 120 yards receiving. But, I mean, I know, look, I'm not going to say it because I know it sounds ridiculous, but, I mean, I would not hold out any doubt in the Patriots at least making an AFC championship run.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm going to be the last person to buy in on the Patriots. I think you know that.
Yeah.
I mean, yesterday they beat the Titans, but what did the Titans have? 15 injuries to key guys?
No, yeah, the Titans, and yeah, they're not playing super well either. You know, they've had a couple bad losses.
I don't know. Look, the Patriots have a couple big games coming up against on the road at the Colts, on the road. This week they play on the road at Buffalo. Then the following week they play on Saturday night. That is a short turnaround. I'm surprised the NFL put that game on Saturday, even though they play on Monday night. It's for TV. And then on the road at the Colts, those are two big games right there. After I see these next 2 weeks from the Patriots, I'll be able to give a better answer on them.
Okay.
I'm still in the Seymour. The defense is playing great. Mac Jones is playing well right now, but I need to see how they play against better teams. So that's where I'm at with them. But that's fair. All right, anything else in the NFL?
No, I think that's it. Yeah. If Washington wins tonight, which God help me, I hope they do, they will be right in the thick of things for that seventh spot for the to make it into the playoffs.
Yeah. The whole NFC is bad.
This is lining up to be just the stereotypical Washington letdown. They're playing better. Seattle stinks. Russell Wilson isn't playing very well. And then all of a sudden Monday night, all eyes on them. All of a sudden DK is going to go for 150 yards and a touchdown. Tyler Lockett's going to have like 12 catches for 105 yards and two touchdowns. And Russell Wilson's just going to ball out. And Taylor Heinicke is going to have like three picks and a touchdown, but kind of look good doing it.
That's what Taylor Heinicke always does, right?
Pretty close to it. Yep.
How's the field going to be there?
Probably going to suck just like it does every other week.
Well, hey, maybe prime time. The groundskeeper is doing a good job.
No, not going to be the case. I promise.
You never know. Hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we'll see. But I think we got to shift over to MLB because, as you mentioned at the top of the show, the hot stove is definitely heating up. The Rangers making a couple splash moves. Marcus Semien signing for big money here to come play and maybe second base or shortstop. They're not really sure which he's going to play just yet because they're also maybe taking a run at Corey Seager, which would be huge. But as far as guys that they've signed already, Marcus Semien comes in and signs a big-time deal. Then they come in and sign Cole Calhoun. So they're obviously spending a little bit of money, a lot more than they're used to or than they have in the past. And like I said, it doesn't look like they're done just yet because they might be making a run at Corey Seager. And according to MLB trade rumors, the RotoWire, if Seager doesn't want to come here, then they're going to make a run at Trevor Story, who a lot of people probably know. He's an Irving guy. I believe he went to Irving High School. I was looking up the numbers here. 7 years, $175 million for Marcus Semien, who set the record for most home runs by a second baseman last year with 45. Won a Silver Slugger Award. Like, I mean, that's a big-time get for the Rangers. I don't know if that's a case of them just offering him the most money, and that's what he signed for, or if, you know, he feels like he can come here and really be a member and be a piece for this rebuild and turning this team around. But like I said, Cole Calhoun signs as well. They also signed John Gray, starting pitcher. So adding to the repertoire there for 4 years with John Gray. So, I mean, the Rangers making some big time moves and sounds like they're not done yet. They got a couple guys in the minors that are going to be coming up. Josh Jung, former Texas Tech Red Raider. He's a third baseman that they're going to have come up pretty soon. There's a couple guys down in the minors. Obviously, Jack Leiter, he's going to be playing Double A Frisco. Maybe we see him this year. Who knows? Cole Wynn is another guy that's on his way up. He's a starting pitcher. I can't remember the guy's first name, but Huff. I think it's Sam Huff. He's a catcher right now. Just absolutely mashes and drops bombs. So Rangers look like they could be finally in a spot where they're turning things around a little bit. Obviously, Adolis Garcia, having him man center field, he's a guy that you kind of want to build around a little bit too and make sure he's a part of this. But they could be in business here in the next season or two with some of these big signings should it all pan out. And the thought that I was reading today was with Corey Seager. He's also repped by Scott Boras, who Marcus Semien is as well. And so he's trying to get everybody signed before the lockdown or the lockout.
And so it sounds like that things could be progressing pretty quickly, and he could, Corey Seager could sign today, whether it be with the Rangers or elsewhere. But either way, they're going to take a swing at Trevor Story. So wild scene at Arlington is they're finally starting to spend some money and see if they can fill up that stadium that they spent so much money on, or the taxpayers spent so much money on, and to get some ROI here. But other news, Max Scherzer might be going to play with the Mets on a 2 or 3 year deal, which that would be insane to see. You know, Max Scherzer back in the NL East pitching against the Nationals, once, you know, former National. The thought is if the Dodgers lose Seager, that they're going to make a strong push to sign Scherzer so that they don't lose their top free agents this year. But a lot of stuff cooking right now. Michael Lorenzen signs with the Angels. I know that's not a big time deal, but you know, obviously adding Thor and Noah Syndergaard going and adding Lorenzen as well. A huge signing there.
They had a Thor and Noah Syndergaard?
Yeah. Oh, both? No, Thor. Thor and Lorenzen, excuse me.
No, I know. But the Rangers, isn't that the most... Okay, so the Rangers owner said, or John Daniel said, that they have $100 million this year to add to payroll, and they are going to spend. So them going on a spending spree to me is not crazy. This is what they were... You were expecting when they said we have $100 million to add to the payroll for the next season. So it's not $100 million over a couple of years. It's for the next year. They have to add $100 million. But isn't the Marcus Semien signing like the most predictable signing for the Rangers, like where they're at? Semien, 31 years old, 7-year deal, had the best year of his career, probably had the best year of his career he will ever have.
Correct.
You're buying him at the ultimate high. And yeah, for 7 years, you're going to get hopefully 3/4 of the production for, say, the next 2 or 3 years you got from Semien. But that's like the ultimate you're going to get there.
Turned down a qualifying offer from the A's, so that's where he was just a year or two ago, was turning down qualifying offers, and now you're signing him for 7 years. What did I say? $175 million, something like that.
Yeah, 25 a year. Why not say, look, if they sign Seager, that's great. That's a great move. Seager's great, and I won't be saying the same things about Seager. Why, if you were going to get two of the big middle infielders, why not spend a little less on Story? Also, an Irving guy. Everybody loves a hometown guy, but. And then go after Seager or something when you think the trajectory for Story is going to be going up a little bit. He's only 27, 28. He's going to be going up a little bit. Semien, probably the trajectory is going to be going down right now. And as I said, I like Marcus Semien. I think he's a good player. But you paid for him at the ultimate peak of something you're probably not going to get on the production-wise. And... like, why not? I like the John Gray move. John Gray's a good third or fourth starter. They need some pitching. Who knows? They probably, who knows? We'll see what else they go pitching-wise. But I don't know. The Rangers, they just did the ultimate, like, Semien, great. He will take the most money. We gave him the extra year because no one went 7 years. Everybody went 6 with them. So he's going to take that extra 7th year. And that's why they got him. I mean, smart, that's how you're going to guarantee a free agent, but this is like a typical Rangers move in my mind.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, I don't disagree at all. And like I said, you're buying the ultimate high and you're hoping that this wasn't just going to be his, a career year for him and you'll never see those numbers again. But, you hope that, he's, like you said, 3/4 of that, I think, would still be pretty good for the Rangers as far as what they're expecting back.
Yeah, and if you want to look at him last year, he played in every game last year, so he's reliable. 45 bombs. I mean, he had a fantastic year. You're getting a 7-win WAR guy. The guy had a 7.1 WAR. That is great. But how much of that and his offensive breakout was being in the lineup with Vlad Guerrero Jr.?
Correct, yeah.
Bo Bichette, Teoscar Hernandez, George Springer when he played. Like, the lineup they probably had the best lineup in baseball last year, wouldn't you say, or one of them?
Oh, yeah.
The top three? Like, they were, I think they had the highest OPS in all of baseball. They just mashed. So, like, how much of Simeon season two was just because of the lineup, they were all so damn good. And he saw way more pitches to hit, good pitches to hit, because it just wears you down facing that lineup. Now, when you come to Texas, Garcia, he really struggled in the second half, really didn't even – he was bad in the second half after he made the All-Star game. He was bad. And I mean, other than that, on the offensive side of the ball or the hitting wise, I don't really know what else they got. But
yeah,
how much of the Simeon thing was that too? So I don't know.
I think some of it too though is, hey, let's just go get a big bat
for sure. Well, they needed it. They need a couple more. So we'll see what else happens there. But all right, Ryan, we went a little long today. You have anything else?
I think that'll do it.
All right, that'll do it. We'll be back on Thursday. I'm going to come on Thursday. You can come on Thursday too. I've got some NFL prop bets. I think if you follow me on Twitter, you already know one of them. But prop bets that have been hitting at a very high rate for the season now as we come into December, I have some of those that I will give out on Thursday there. And if you have some, bring them to the table as well.
Will do.
All right, we'll be back on Thursday. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Talk to you then.